scripting will be 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, and even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of the Lord. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror.
It's sort of a supplement to this morning's lesson. Discussion about wives winning their husbands to the Lord. As someone once observed, religion seems to be for women and children. That is, churches generally are found to be frequented only with female and the young, while the male still is at home and watches the football games. Now, this is a little bit of an exaggeration, at least for the Church of Christ, but it is one of those things that is becoming more and more of a problem of women find themselves in a circumstance where their husband is not a member of the church and they have to deal with that. Marriage has always been in trouble when people fail to realize just what stability a godly family means to one's life, one's home, even one's nation. This lack of religion in men means that there are more Christian wives and unbelieving husbands, which affords many a great difficulty. Here in other places I've been, I've had, you know, women come up and ask what they can do, you know, to try to reach, you know, their husbands. A Christian woman may find her religion scorned, her Savior insulted, and herself constantly reproached with hurtful sarcasms by her spouse. However, wives can still be not only peacemakers, but also evangelists to their husbands with God's instruction. In a close look at 1 Peter 3, which was just read, 1 Peter 2, going back a previous chapter, in verses 13 and 15, I think, which close out the second chapter, says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. Now, this is a principle laid out because what we're going to talk about for as a viable tool for, you know, wives to be able to connect with their husbands is also used by the normal Christian in situations where he has to deal with the government or business or whatever, where he may be kind of unequally yoked, you know, with unbelievers in a position where he can't really dictate terms. How does he go about? So if you look at the next verse, goes on as a continuation of the thought. Sometimes, unfortunately, there are chapter divisions, and we think they, you know, they bring in a new thought. And this one, notice what it does. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. So when Peter begins the second passage with in the same way, he's actually, you know, referring back to what we just read in the close of the second chapter, that this is the way Christians can reach people even without saying anything, you know, by their behavior. He's referring back to the context, you know, in the first passage. There the subject is silencing the ignorance of the foolish men by the means of doing what is right. The emphasis is not so much on saying as on doing. I had a personal experience with this with one individual. He was a dye-in-the-wool atheist, you know, who I was working with. And I took him home one time, and he turned to me and said, "Have you noticed I've cleaned up my language?" I didn't know what to say. And he was, just because of my demeanor, he was trying to improve himself, just wanting to be a friend and knowing we work together. And so I realized how much this hits home. Sometimes you don't have to say a word, just by the way you conduct yourself is a good testament. Although Christians are warned by Paul not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers, 1 Corinthians 6:14, still they often find themselves in circumstances not of their own making or choosing, where all they can do is live the best possible godly life they can. Whether as a citizen, servant, employee, inductee, or spouse, and let the Lord influence people through their actions alone. Please note that the word influence is used, and not the word convert. No one can be converted without hearing the word of the gospel. But one can be influenced to begin asking about it. And you'll find that if you live in a good Christian life, people will come up to you and ask you, you know, why do you live the way you do? How come you don't do certain things? You know, it sparks their curiosity. It talks to something in them, wanting to better their own lives. So a wife's pleas may be considered contentious if she tries to openly or aggressively, convert her husband, but her meekness and quietness cannot be misunderstood. As someone once said, a holy life is better than holy words, better even than a trainload of sermons. You live the sermon, so people know that you're walking the talk before they even know what the talk is. So what Peter does not advise in these situations? First of all, the wife is not advised to browbeat her husband. This is really forbidden in the context. That's what he's warning them against doing. Second, there's no allowance for the wife to leave her husband and marry another. You know, just because they're not getting along is no reason to make a separation, because there's another law involved, the law of marriage. Compare Paul's more extended instruction on such matters. We go to 1 Corinthians 7. Now, the context has things that are Paul's opinions and things that are Lord's command, so I've tried to list that which is more along the lines of not Paul's observations or advice, but more or less God's. When Paul says, "But because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife and each woman have her own husband, let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband." So in a marriage, that's to be realized that there's a duty involved. And the duty concerns, the weaknesses or the desires that God has put into us to keep them healthy. And that is to look out for each for one another. Therefore, he says, stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So the marriage is there for a reason. We talked about more positive, but there's a negative reason too. Or not necessarily negative, but the counterpart of it is God recognizing some of our needs, and this is the proper way that God has set up for us to meet those. And we have to consider that, one another's needs. Paul goes on, to the married I give instruction, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. If she does leave, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband, and that her husband should not send his wife away. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away. So even if the husband is not a Christian and doesn't go along with her beliefs, if he's still content to live in the situation, Paul says, go ahead and do that. Third, Peter does not advise the wife to neglect her service to God. One cannot rationalize the passage that a wife is to be in subjection to her husband to the point of ignoring God. In Ephesians 5:22, it talks about the husband and wife being in subjection to one another in the fear of Christ. And thus violate the passage that says that a Christian is not to forsake an assembly. So because her husband is not a Christian, doesn't give him a license to keep her at home. In this case, you know, to go to services to worship her God has a priority. Both responsibilities must be harmonized. There has to be a way. Most of marriage is a negotiation, and you can work it out. You can work that negotiation out with employers. A lot of people think that just because the employer says you got to work Wednesday or Sunday or whatever, that there's no room to negotiate. You know, I found it so that there is room to negotiate. In fact, I've walked out on meetings with my boss's consent just because I had to be to Wednesday night. In 1 Peter 3, 2, Peter talks about as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. The chaste and respectful behavior includes sanctifying Christ. This is within the context of this. And being ready to make a defense with gentleness and reverence, along with keeping a good conscience and a good behavior in Christ. 1 Peter 3, 15 and 16. And concerning this last behavior in Christ, note Peter adds the possibility of suffering for doing what is right. And this is something the wife must contend with, and also that the husband is going to have to learn to contend with. This should make the wife consider staying home or engaging in some of the things the husband may be doing in disobedience to the word. So again, her priority is obeying God. In 1 Peter 3, 3, Peter goes on to say, and let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses. Now, they went to extremes at this time. You know, it was like, this is all a person saw of the girl, of the woman. I mean, they decked themselves out in, you know, fine clothes and jewels and whatever, doing the hair up and all sorts of coiffures. Peter also does not advise her to be overly concerned with her outward appearance. Attractiveness and cleanliness are essential. We talked about this morning, the godly woman. But the primary concern is with the heart. Paul parallels this, where he says, likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as befit women making a claim to godliness. So these good works are the things that should be winning over the husband, to realize, you know, the husband making realize just what a jewel of a woman he has. And he should be inquiring, well, why is she like this? And oftentimes it'll kind of prompt him to try to be a better husband, and that'll lead him into looking, well, how do you be a better husband? Go by God's word. In 1 Timothy 4:8, Paul goes on to say, for bodily discipline is only of little profit. Notice it doesn't say that of no profit. You know, some exercise is good for you. But godliness is profitable for all things, since it holds a promise for the present life and also for the life to come. So what do you zero in on? What is the most important thing? A godly life, which we talked about this morning, is something that has a not just a priority, but an imperative in life. Why? Because, as Paul is laying it out here, if you think about stepping out of this life into the next, what do you take with you? Everything that's in your bank account, everything you got buried in the backyard, you're going to leave it all. All your closet for clothes and shoes, all your cosmetics, every last thing you own, the stuff in your life, you're not taking with you. Now, there's times in our history when people have to realize what is important and what isn't. I remember the time when people were starting to leave the East Coast and heading west, you know, following Horace Greeley's advice. And a lot of them began to find, I mean, they left and they thought, oh, we'll take everything with us. And they loaded up the covered wagon with everything, pot-bellied stoves, you know, bureaus, everything their grandmother left them, whatever. And at some point, they had to realize that when they're starting to kill the mules, or the wheels are bogging down in sand, or the train is getting, you know, more of an incline, In fact, funny anecdote that I read down in the San Bernardino Museum is that some of the Indians used to guide the covered wagons, you know, to the West Coast, and they used to take them over the worst trails so people would start jettisoning the stuff out of their wagon and the Indians would come back later and pick it up. But the people were learning some things, you know, what was really necessary, what was imperative to make a life. And a lot of things that they just, you know, were keepsakes or something like that, they got rid of quickly. And that's one of the things we're going to have to learn as Christians. When we make the transition from this life into the next, what is the most important thing? And Paul is telling the wife here and also the men that a godly nature is the only thing really that's going to stand by you in the next life. There won't be any possessions. They'll just be what you become as you live eternity in the presence of God. You know, or if you are acceptable to be in his presence for eternity. And godliness, obviously, by the mere term, you know, being godlike is what he's looking for. And it's also what shines in this life. What Paul does, or what Peter does advise, first, the advice is to be submissive. Now, this kind of goes against the grain for a lot of people, but it's a word that's used a lot, both for women and men. But in the relationship of a man and a woman, it's a present participle. This means habitually. I mean, it's got to be an ongoing thing. But it also has to be voluntary. You know, it's usually one of those middle voice words. That is, it's what you do to yourself. The husband doesn't make you submissive. You really can't make somebody submissive that way. I mean, there's resentment and everything else. It has to be, as you're submissive to God, it has to be something you want to do, that you willingly put yourself in servitude to God. The wife does that, you know, the man does that to Christ, the wife does that to the husband. You know, 1 Corinthians 11, that's the way it starts out. Again, this has to be genuine. God's looking at the heart. Peter says the wife should be respectful, 1 Peter 3:2. The word here is also translated reverent and implies an anxious avoidance of anything that might interfere with conjugal rights and the authority of the husband. To hold one in respect and awe. He gives examples of this along with some words that we need to define. Chasteness is purity in thoughts, speech, and life. Let me go back for a moment on that submissive or subjection, whatever term that's used. It's a military term. It's borrowed from the military. And this is when men go in into a system of rank. And you know, who's ever got the most rank, that's the one you're in subjection to. And it doesn't mean anything more than they have the authority. During the time I was in the service, the Vietnam War was going on, and there was a lot of second lieutenants over in the bush, and there were some sergeants. The sergeants had usually done a couple of tours, and they knew what they were talking about. It would be a wise lieutenant that listened to the sergeant, but the sergeant was still under the command of the lieutenant. That's the way the rank is in the military. In the last part of my service, I grew very close. You know, we were a tight-knit unit. The captain, the top sergeant, everybody, we got in RVs, and we went, you know, out places and visited. In fact, that was part of our job, to visit places around 29 Palms, take pictures of it and whatever, and we might be on a first-name basis. But when we got back into the military situation, it was always captain, yes, sir, you know, whatever. And you just fell naturally into it. You know, you did not, looking for the term, you did not presuppose or presume on their relationship. Just, you know, even though you know they're, you'd been in their house and knew their first name and everything else, they were still captain, and you were in subjection to them. So, along with this is chasteness. is purity in thoughts, speech, and life. For a woman to act vulgar and crass is disrespectful and disgusting. It's disgusting not only to her husband, but also to others. It's kind of interesting that there are women that, to a negative side, I was reading about Julie, who would play Mary Poppins in Sound of Music. Okay. Anyway, when she got married, she got a family. And one of the things that was a problem was her language. In fact, they had a system that every time somebody used a cuss word, they had to put some money in the pot. And she ended up putting in a lot of money every day until she learned. You know, it's one of those things that just wasn't appealing about it. You'd think, she was appealing because in the role she played, she was always sweet and nice and everything else. But when she took on real life, she wasn't so sweet and nice anymore. And it's because of the worldliness. And God is saying, if you really want to appeal, why did she appeal in the role of Mary Poppins or the nanny in The Sound of Music? It's because she was intelligent, sweet, nice, whatever. And for some reason, women feel that that's not a proper role for them. And the ones that usually play nice roles in their younger life, try to get into more raunchy roles and later on to show people, hey, we can be this way too. Well, why? When you're doing fine in that role. People like you. And they don't necessarily go to see you when you're being the bad girl. For Paul's thoughts on the inner man, I'll give you some passages here. This is what God's looking at. Paul talks about with the Christian, even though our outer man, this is 2 Corinthians 4, our outer man is decaying, but the inner man, as a Christian, is being renewed day by day. The spirit of the man doesn't have to grow old and feeble. It can grow stronger. In fact, even the mind of man can oftentimes grow stronger with age. He doesn't have to get feeble. I think somebody once pointed out, with President Reagan, some of his cabinet and the Supreme Court justices, they were all in their 70s, and they were running a country and doing pretty good. So you don't have to let yourself go in later life. God has supplied a way for us to keep growing inside, and that's what we have to look toward. 1 Peter 3:4. But let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. According to Albert Barnes, to be gentle and quiet is to have a calm temper, a contented mind, a heart free from passion, pride, envy, and irritability, a soul not subject to the agitations and vexations of those who live for a fashion, and who seek to be distinguished for external adorning. And that's the way of the world. I was surprised down in Mission Viejo when, in high school, one of the things that, you had to have the latest fashions. In fact, the girls were so rude, they'd come up to somebody, say, sitting down on the steps, and they'd actually grab the back of their collar and pull their shirt up to see what label they had in it. And then, that it was a genuine and not a knockoff and all that kind of stuff. And you were judged according to that. That's the world. Christians should judge each other by, the quality of the heart. One must be able to take harsh words quietly without anger. I mean, this is what we're striving for. According to Paul to Timothy, 1 Timothy 2:2, we work to have a gentle and quiet life in dignity. That's what the purpose of man is supposed to be, not living to the extreme or being how rude they can be or whatever. The purpose that God intended us for was a gentle and quiet life. Nobility, dignity, whatever, and we seem to shy away from that. That's unfortunate. But our job as Christians is to try to shoot for that, to push for it. for a wife to be to accept her role will cause her to be free from the character of the world. That is, you do what Paul and Peter suggest for all of us, either the man or the woman, is to accept God's world, and that will keep you insulated from the real world, or the external world, the worldliness. Actually, God's world is the real world. Unfortunately, people don't realize this. In 1 Peter 3, 5 through 6, for in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you have become her children if you do what is right about being frightened by any fear. I almost hate to ask this, but do the women address their husbands as Lord? I mean, I can almost see the eyes go, really? And I mean, this is what God says. Do you really approach your relationship that way? Or if you do call him Lord, is there a tongue-in-cheek or a little bit of sarcasm involved? Oh, my Lord. It has to be genuine. As genuine as the man calls Jesus Lord. There's a lot of things that have to be plugged into it. You know, as Paul puts it in 1 Corinthians 11, the head of Christ is God. And Jesus called God Lord. The head of man is Christ. So man calls Christ Lord. The head of man, or the head of the woman, is man. That's the order. And again, it doesn't mean anything except you're respectful to, you know, people's authority that God has given them. Doesn't mean anything. Like I said, you know, use the example of the lieutenant and the sergeant. That sergeant may know more about what's going on. He's more battle-hardened, and the lieutenant would be smart to listen to him. And there's a lot of, you know, the wives we talked about this morning, that sometimes they know more, like Priscilla did, than their husbands. And it'd be smart for the husband to listen to what the wife has to say. But the wife must realize, you know, what her position is, as the man needs to know his. You can be over someone, have an authority, without pushing it. In fact, someone that doesn't push it is probably got a better following than those that do. Oh, that's the end of it. Okay, this Sarah used to obey Abraham, calling him Lord, and you become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. Now, this is the way Peter puts it. You ask yourself, are you children of Sarah? Just as the comparison here between Galatians 3 and 7 and Romans 4, 11 is Peter asks the men, you know, to think about, are you properly children of Abraham? Do you have the same faith that Abraham does? Do you commit your life to obedience, you know, the way Abraham did? I mean, it was a learning process, but the final outcome was Abraham was willing to give his own son in obedience to God. In comparison, how do women present themselves? As daughters of Sarah, are you willing to be, you know, like a Sarah who committed herself also to God way up into past 100? There was a lot of problems that Abraham and Sarah went through, but in the final analysis, they turned out to be a faithful couple to one another and to God. And that's what we need to shoot for as Christians, you know, being faithful in all our relationships. You know, we have to be in subjection to authorities. We have to be in subjection to one another, in subjection to elders. Yeah. There's rules that we have to play in all circumstances. You know, as Paul gets into it, slaves, you know, obligation to their masters, even. But there's no stigma to it as long as you do and fulfill your role to the best of your ability, even as a slave. You know, realizing, Paul says, you're serving God, not necessarily the guy, you know, that's giving you the orders. You know, in each one of us, God has placed us in the circumstance which he wants us to best carry out our obligations and duties to him. He's put us in these situations in order to learn properly how to be in subjection. It's one of the things that sometimes we don't learn too well. But it's one of those things, the more we learn it, the more we realize that even Christ and the things he suffered learned obedience as a son. And so it's an example for us. So whatever we are, ladies also, in your role as a wife, yeah, do it to the best of your ability. And God will reward you accordingly. And if there's anything else anybody needs help with, please let us know as we stand to sing.